Chapter 30. Men dream here.
These white cloaks are a tight-lipped group, my lady, Lucille said with a smug smile. But they're still men. Men who haven't seen a woman in a while, I think. That always makes them lose what few brains they have.
Fail walked the horse lines, the sky dark, lantern held before her. Perrin was asleep. He'd retired early these last few days, seeking the wolf dream. The white cloaks had reluctantly agreed to delay the trial, but Perrin still should have been preparing his words to speak there. He grumbled that he already knew what he was going to say. Knowing him, he'd just tell Morgaze what had happened, straightforward as usual. Lucille and Saland walked on either side of Fail. Other members of Cha Fail walked behind, keeping careful watch for anyone close enough to be within earshot.
"I think the White Cloaks knew we were there to spy," Saland said. The short, pale woman walked with hand on her sword. The stance didn't seem as awkward as it once had. Saland had taken her sword training seriously.
"No, I doubt they guessed," Lucille replied. She still wore a simple tan blouse and darker brown skirt. Saland had changed back to breeches and sword immediately upon returning. She still bore a cut on her arm from where that sword had tried to kill her, but Lucille seemed to be savoring her time in the skirt.
"They barely said anything of use," Saland said.
"Yes," Lucille replied, "but I think they're merely in that habit. Our excuse of checking on Megden and the others was a reasonable one, my lady. We were able to deliver your note, then do a little chatting with the men. I teased out enough to be of some use."
Fail raised an eyebrow, though Lucille fell quiet as they passed a groom working late, brushing down one of the horses.
"The White Cloaks respect Galad," Lucille said once out of the groom's earshot, "though some grumble about the things he's been telling them."
"What things?" Fail asked. "He wants them to ally with the Aes Sedai for the last battle," Lucille explained.
"Anyone could have told you they would dislike that idea," Saland said. "They're White Cloaks."
"Yes," Fail said. "But it means that this Galad is more reasonable than his men. A useful tip, Lucille."
The young woman swelled, brushing her short hair back in a modest gesture, throwing back the red ribbons she had tied there. She'd taken to wearing twice as many now, since her Shido captivity. Up ahead, a lanky figure stepped between two of the horses. He had a thick mustache, Tarabonner style, and though he was young, he had the air of one who had seen much in his life. Danil Lewin, the man in charge of the Two Rivers men now that Tam had mysteriously decided to depart. Light send that Tam was safe, wherever he'd gone.
"Why, Danil," Fail said. "What an odd coincidence to see you here."
"Coincidence?" he asked, scratching at his head. He held his bow in one hand, staff-like, though he kept glancing at it, wary. A lot of people did that with their weapons now. "You asked me to come here."
"It must be a coincidence nonetheless," Fail said, "in case anyone asks, particularly if that somebody is my husband."
"I don't like keeping things from Lord Perrin," Danil said, falling into step with her.
"And you'd prefer to risk letting him be beheaded by a group of rabid white cloaks?"
"No, none of the men do."
"You've done what I asked, then?"
Danil nodded.
"I spoke to Grady and Niald. Lord Perrin has already ordered them to stay nearby, but we talked. Grady said he'd have Weaves of Air ready and will grab Lord Perrin and get out if things get ugly. Niald covering the retreat. I've talked to the men from the Two Rivers. A group of archers in the trees will be ready to provide a distraction."
Fail nodded. Neither Ashaman had been wounded in this bubble of evil, fortunately. Each had been carrying a knife, but reports said they'd looked at the floating weapons, then nonchalantly waved hands and blasted them from the air. When messengers with news of Fael's earth-throwing trick had reached the section of camp the Ashaman had been in, they'd found this area in much less chaos. Grady and Neald striding through camp and felling weapons wherever they saw them. Part of the reason for the delay before the trial was to take care of healing, but another large reason was because Perrin wanted to give time to the camp's smiths and craftsmen to make replacement weapons for those who had lost theirs, just in case the trial turned to a battle, and Fael was increasingly certain that it would.
"Lord Perrin won't like being pulled away from fighting," Danil said. "Not one bit."
"That tent could turn into a death trap," Fael said. "Perrin can lead the battle if he wants, but from a safer position. You will get him out." Danil sighed, but nodded.
"Yes, my lady."
Perrin was learning not to fear Young Bull. Step by step, he learned balance. The wolf when the wolf was needed, the man when the man was needed. He let himself be drawn into the hunt, but keep Fael, his home, in his mind. He walked the edge of the sword, but each step made him more confident. Today, he hunted Hopper, wily and experienced prey. But Young Bull was quick to learn, and having the mind of a man gave him advantages. He could think like something or someone that he was not. Was this how Gnome had begun? Where would this path of understanding lead? There was a secret to this, a secret Young Bull had to find for himself. He could not fail. He had to learn. It seemed that, somehow, the more confident he became in the wolf dream, the more comfortable he became with himself in the waking world. Young Bull charged through an unfamiliar forest. No, a jungle, with hanging vines and wide fronded ferns. The underbrush was so thick that a rat would have trouble squeezing through. But Young Bull demanded that the world open before him. Vines pulled back, shrubs bent, ferns retracted, like mothers pulling their children out of the way of a galloping horse. He caught glimpses of Hopper bounding ahead. His prey vanished. Young Bull didn't break pace, charging through that spot and catching the scent of Hopper's destination. Young Bull shifted onto an open plain with no trees and an unfamiliar scrub patching the ground. His prey was a series of streaking blurs in the distance. Young Bull followed, each bound carrying him hundreds of paces. Within seconds, they approached an enormous plateau. His prey ran directly up the side of the stone shelf. Young Bull followed, ignoring what was right. He ran with the ground far below at his back, nose toward that boiling sea of black clouds. He leaped over clefts in the rock, ricocheting between two sides of a rift, cresting the top of the plateau. Hopper attacked. Young Bull was ready. He rolled, coming up on all fours as his prey leaped over his head, passed over the cliff's edge, but then vanished in a flash and was back standing on the lip of the cliff. Young Bull became Perrin, holding a hammer made of soft wood. Such things were possible in the wolf dream. If the hammer hit, it would not harm. Perrin swung, the air cracking with the sudden speed of his motion. But Hopper was equally fast, dodging out of the way. He rolled, then leaped at Perrin's back, fangs glistening. Perrin growled and shifted so that he was standing a few feet from where he had been. Hopper's jaws snapped open air, and Perrin swung his hammer again. Hopper was suddenly shrouded in a deep mist. Perrin's hammer slammed down through it, hitting the ground. It bounced off. He cursed, spinning. In the fog, he couldn't see, couldn't catch Hopper's scent. A shadow moved in the mist, and Perrin lunged. But it was only a pattern in the air. He spun and found shadows moving all around him, the shapes of wolves, men, and other creatures he couldn't see.
"Make the world yours, Young Bull," Hopper sent.
Perrin focused, thinking of dry air, of the musty scent of dust. That was what the air should be like in an arid landscape like this. No, It wasn't what the air should be like. It was how the air was. His mind, his will, his feelings slammed against something else. He pushed through. The mists vanished, evaporating in the heat. Hopper sat on his haunches a short distance away.
Good, the wolf sent. You learn.
He glanced sideways, looking toward the north, seeming distracted by something. Then he was gone. Perrin caught his scent and followed to the Johanna Road. Hopper dashed along outside the strange violet dome. They jumped back to this place frequently to see if the dome ever vanished. So far, it had not. Perrin continued the chase. Was the dome meant to trap wolves inside? But if that was the case, why had Slayer not sprung his trap at Dragonmount, where so many wolves had for some reason gathered? Perhaps the dome had another purpose. Perrin memorized a few notable rock formations along the perimeter of the dome, then followed Hopper to a low shelf of rock. The wolf leaped from it, vanishing in midair, and Perrin followed. He caught the scent of Hopper's destination in mid-jump, then took himself there, still in motion. He appeared about 2 feet above a shimmering blue expanse. Stunned, he fell and splashed into the water. He swam frantically, dropping his hammer. Hopper stood on top of the water, bearing a wolfish expression of disapproval.
Not good, the wolf added. You still need to learn.
Perrin sputtered. The sea grew tempestuous, but Hopper sat placidly upon the rolling waves. Again he glanced northward, but then turned back to Perrin.
Water troubles you, young bull.
I was just surprised, Perrin said, swimming hard.
Why?
Because I didn't expect this.
Why expect? Hopper sent. When you follow another, you could end up anywhere.
I know.
Perrin spat out a mouthful of water. He gritted his teeth, then imagined himself standing on the water like Hopper. Blessedly, he rose out of the sea to stand atop its surface. It was a strange sensation, the sea undulating beneath him.
You will not defeat Slayer like this, Hopper sent.
Then I will keep learning, Perrin said.
There is little time. I will learn more quickly. Can you? We have no other choice. You could choose not to fight him.
Perrin shook his head.
Do we run from our prey? If we do, they'll hunt us instead. I will face him, and I need to be prepared. There is a way.
The wolf smelled of worry.
I'll do what I have to. Follow.
Hopper vanished, and Perrin caught an unexpected scent. Refuse and mud, burning wood and coal. People. Perrin shifted and found himself atop a building in Camelin. He had visited this city only once and briefly, and seeing the beautiful inner city before him, ancient buildings, domes and spires rising atop the hill like majestic pines atop a crowned mountain, gave him pause. He was near the old wall, beyond which spread the new city. Hopper sat at his side, looking over the beautiful city. Much of the city itself was said to be Ogier-built, and Perrin could believe it, with that marvelous beauty. Tarvalin was said to be more grand than Camelin. Perrin had trouble believing that was possible.
Why are we here? Perrin asked.
Men dream here,
Hopper replied. In the real world, they did. Here, the place was empty. It was light enough to be day, despite that storm overhead, and Perrin felt there should be people crowding the streets. Women, going to and from market, nobles atop horses, wagons bearing barrels of ale and sacks of grain, children scampering, slip fingers searching for marks, workers replacing paving stones, enterprising hawkers offering meat pies to them all. Instead, there were hints, shadows, a fallen handkerchief on the street, doors that were open one moment, then closed the next, a thrown horseshoe sticking from the mud of an alleyway. It was as if all of the people had been whisked away, snatched by Fades or some monster from a Gleeman's dark tale. A woman appeared momentarily below. She wore a beautiful green and gold dress. She stared at the street, eyes glazed over, then was gone. People did occasionally appear in the wolf dream. Perrin figured it must happen to them when they were asleep, part of their natural dreams.
"This place," Hopper said, "is not only a place of wolves. It is a place of all."
"Of all?" Perrin asked, sitting down on the roof tiles.
"All souls know this place," Hopper said. "They come here when they reach for it."
"When they're dreaming?"
"Yes," Hopper said, lying down beside him. "The fear dreams of men are strong, so very strong. Sometimes those terrible dreams come here."
That sending was an enormous wolf, the size of a building, knocking aside much smaller wolves who tried to snap at him. There was a scent of terror and death about the wolf, like a nightmare. Perrin nodded slowly.
"Many wolves have been caught in the pains of these fear dreams. They appear more commonly where men might walk, though the dream lives without those who created it."
Hopper looked at Perrin.
"Hunting in the fear dreams will teach you strength, but you might die. It is very dangerous." "I don't have time to be safe anymore," Perrin said. "Let's do it."
Hopper didn't ask if he was certain. He jumped down to the street and Perrin followed, landing softly. Hopper began to lope forward, so Perrin broke into a jog.
"How do we find them?" Perrin asked.
"Smell fear," Hopper sent. "Terror."
Perrin closed his eyes, breathing in deeply. Just as doors flashed open and closed, in the wolf dream he could sometimes smell things there for a moment, then gone. Musty winter potatoes, the dung of a passing horse, a pie baking. When he opened his eyes, he saw none of these things. They weren't really there, but they almost were. They could have been.
"There,"
Hopper said, vanishing. Perrin followed, appearing beside the wolf outside of a narrow alleyway. Inside, it looked too dark to be natural.
"Go in," Hopper said. "You will not last long your first time. I will come for you. Remember, it is not. Remember, it is false."
Feeling worried but determined, Perrin stepped into the alleyway. The walls to either side were black, as if they'd been painted. Only, these walls were too dark to be painted. Was that a tuft of grass beneath his foot? The sky above had stopped boiling, and he thought he could see stars peeking down. A pale moon, far too large, appeared in the sky, shrouded in clouds. It gave a cold glow, like ice. He wasn't in the city anymore. He turned about, alarmed, to find himself in a forest. The trees had thick trunks, and were of no species he could recognize. Their branches were naked. The bark was a faint gray, lit by the phantom light above, and looked like bone. He needed to get back to the city, out of this terrible place. He turned around. Something flashed in the night and he spun.
"Who's there?"
he shouted. A woman burst from the darkness, running in a mad scramble. She wore a loose white robe, little more than a shift, and she had long, dark hair streaming behind her. She saw him and froze, then turned and made as if to run in a different direction. Perrin cut her off, snatching her hand, pulling her back. She struggled, feet marring the loamy dark ground beneath as she tried to pull away. She was gasping, in and out, in and out. She smelled frantic.
"I need to know the way out," Perrin said. "We have to return to the city."
She met his eyes.
"He's coming,"
she hissed. Her hand slipped from his and she ran, vanishing into the night, the darkness enfolding her like a shroud. Perrin took a step forward, hand outstretched. He heard something behind him, He turned slowly to find something enormous, a looming shadow that sucked in the moonlight. The thing seemed to draw breath away, absorbing his very life and will. The thing reared up taller. It was taller than the trees, a hulking monster with arms as thick as barrels, its face and body lost in shadow. It opened deep red eyes, like two huge coals flaring to life.
I need to fight it, Perrin thought,
hammer appearing in his hand. He took a step forward, then thought better of it.
Light. That thing was enormous.
He couldn't fight it. Not out in the open like this. He needed cover. He turned and ran through the hostile woods. The thing followed. He could hear it snapping branches, its footsteps making the earth shake. Ahead of him, he saw the woman, her thin white gown slowing her as it caught on a branch. She pulled free and continued to run. The creature loomed. It would catch him, consume him, destroy him. He yelled for the woman, reaching out toward her. She glanced over her shoulder at him and tripped. Perrin cursed. He scrambled to her side to help her up. But the thing was so close. It was a fight then. His heart was thumping as quickly as a woodlark pecking a tree. Hands sweaty, he turned, gripping his hammer to face the terrible thing behind. He placed himself between it and the woman. It reared up, growing larger, those red eyes blazing with fire.
Light. He couldn't fight that, could he?
He needed an edge of some kind.
What is that thing?
He desperately asked of the woman.
Why does it chase us?
It's him, she hissed. The dragon reborn.
Perrin froze. The dragon reborn? But that was Rand. It's a nightmare, he reminded himself. None of this is real. I can't let myself be caught up in it. The ground trembled as if moaning. He could feel the heat of the monster's eyes. A scrambling sound came from behind as the woman ran, leaving him. Perrin stood up, legs shaking, every instinct crying for him to run. But no, he couldn't fight it either. He could not accept this as real. A wolf howled, then leaped into the clearing. Hopper seemed to push back the darkness. The creature bent down toward Perrin, reaching a massive hand as if to crush him. This was an alley, inside of Camelin. It wasn't real. It was not. The darkness around them faded. The enormous dark shadow creature warped in the air like a piece of cloth being stretched. The moon vanished. A small pocket of ground, the dirty, trampled earth of an alley, appeared at their feet. Then, with a snap, the dream was gone. Perrin stood in the alley again, Hopper at his side, no sign of the forest or the terrible creature that someone had viewed as the dragon reborn. Perrin exhaled slowly. Sweat dripped from his brow. He reached up to wipe it away, then willed the sweat away instead. Hopper vanished and Perrin followed, finding himself on the same rooftop as before. He sat down. Merely thinking of that shadow made him shiver.
It was so real, he said. A piece of me knew it was a nightmare. I couldn't help but try to fight or try to run. When I did either, it grew stronger, didn't it? Because I accepted it was real?
Yes. You must not believe what you see.
Perrin nodded.
There was a woman in there. Part of the dream? She wasn't real either?
Yes.
Maybe she was the one who dreamed it, Perrin said. The one having the original nightmare, caught up in it and trapped here in the world of dreams. Men who dream do not stay here long,
Hopper sent. To him, that was the end of the discussion.
You were strong, young bull. You did well.
He smelled proud.
It helped when she called the thing the Dragon Reborn. That showed it wasn't real. Helped me believe it wasn't.
You did well, foolish cub,
Hopper repeated.
Perhaps you can learn.
Only if I keep practicing. We need to do that again. Can you find another?
Yes, Hopper sent. There are always nightmares when your kind is near. Always.
The wolf turned northward again, however. Perrin had thought that the thing that had been distracting him earlier was the dreams, but it didn't seem that was the cause.
What is up there? Perrin asked. What is it you keep looking toward?
It comes,
Hopper sent.
What?
The last hunt. It begins. Or it does not.
Perrin frowned, standing.
You mean, right now?
The decision will be made. Soon.
What decision?
Hopper's sendings were confusing, and he couldn't decipher them.
Light and darkness, a void and fire, a coldness and a terrible, terrible heat, mixed with wolves howling, calling, lending strength.
Come.
Hopper stood, looking to the northeast. Hopper vanished. Perrin shifted after him, appearing low down on the slopes of Dragon Mount, beside an outcropping of stone.
Light,
Perrin said softly, looking up in awe. The storm that had been brewing for months had come to a head. A massive black thunderhead dominated the sky, covering the top of the mountain. It spun slowly in the air like an enormous vortex of blackness, letting out bolts of lightning that connected to the clouds above. In other parts of the wolf dream, the clouds were tempestuous, yet distant. They felt immediate. This was the focus of something. Perrin could feel it. Often the wolf dream reflected things in the real world in strange or unexpected ways. Hopper stood on the outcropping. Perrin could feel wolves all across the slopes of Dragon Mount, in even greater numbers than he'd felt here recently.
They wait, Hopper said. The last hunt comes.
As Perrin reached out, he found that other packs were coming, still distant but moving toward Dragon Mount. Perrin looked upward at the monstrous peak. The tomb of the dragon, Luz Theron. It was a monument to his madness, to both his failure and his success, his pride and his self-sacrifice.
The wolves, Perrin said. They gather for the last hunt?
Yes, if it occurs.
Perrin turned back to Hopper.
You said that it would. The last hunt comes, you said.
A choice must be made, young bull. One path leads to the last hunt.
And the other?
Perrin asked. Hopper didn't respond immediately. He turned toward Dragon Mount.
The other path does not lead to the last hunt.
Yes, but what does it lead to?
To nothing.
Perrin opened his mouth to press further, but then the weight of Hopper's sending hit him. Nothing to the wolf meant a vacant den, all of the pups taken by trappers, a night sky empty of stars, the moon fading, the smell of old blood, dry, stale, and flaked away. Perrin closed his mouth. The sky continued to churn with that black storm. He smelled it on the wind, the smell of broken trees and dirt, of flooded fields and lightning fires. As so often, particularly recently, those scents seemed to contrast with the world around him. One of his senses told him he was in the very center of a catastrophe, while the others saw nothing amiss.
This choice, why don't we just make it?
It is not our choice, young bull.
Perrin felt drawn to the clouds above. Despite himself, he began to walk up the slope. Hopper loped up beside him.
It is dangerous above, young bull.
I know,
Perrin said, but he couldn't stop. Instead, he increased his speed, each step launching him just a little farther. Hopper ran beside him, passing trees, rocks, groups of watching wolves. Upward, Perrin and Hopper went, climbing until the trees dwindled and the ground grew cold with frost and ice. Eventually, they approached the cloud itself. It seemed a dark fog, shaking with currents as it spun. Perrin hesitated at the perimeter, then stepped inside. It was like stepping into the nightmare. The wind was suddenly violent, the air buzzing with energy. Leaves and dirt and grit blew in the tempest, and he had to raise a hand against it. No, he thought. A small bubble of calm air opened around him. The tempest continued to blow just inches from his face, and he had to strain to keep from being claimed by it again. This storm wasn't a nightmare or a dream. It was something more vast, something more real. This time, Perrin was the one creating something abnormal with the bubble of safety. He pressed forward, soon leaving tracks in snow. Hopper strode against the wind, lessening its effect on him as well. He was stronger at it than Perrin was. Perrin could manage to keep his own bubble up. He feared that without it, he would be sucked into the storm and tossed into the air. He saw large branches rip past in the air, and even some smaller trees. Hopper slowed, then sat down in the snow. He looked upward toward the peak.
I cannot stay, the wolf sent. This is not my place. I understand, Perrin said.
The wolf vanished, but Perrin continued. He couldn't explain what drew him, but he knew that he needed to witness. Someone did. He walked for what seemed like hours, focused completely on only two things, keeping the winds off him and putting one foot in front of the other. The storm grew increasingly violent. The storm was so bad here that he couldn't keep all of the storm off, just the worst of it. He passed the ridged lip where the mountaintop was broken, picking his way alongside it, hunkered against the gusts, a steep fall on either side. Wind began to whip at his clothing, and he had to squint his eyes against the dust and snow in the air. But he continued on, striving for the peak which rose ahead, rising above the blasted outside of the mountain. He knew that atop that point, he would find what he searched for. This horrible maelstrom was the wolf dream's reaction to something great, something terrible. In this place, sometimes things were more real than in the waking world. The dream reflected a tempest because something very important was happening. He worried that it was something terrible. Perrin pressed forward, shoving his way through the snows, crawling up rock faces, his fingers leaving skin sticking to the frigid stones. But he had trained well these last few weeks. He leapt chasms he shouldn't have been able to leap, and climbing rocks that should have been too high for him. A figure stood at the very top of the jagged, broken tip of the mountain. Perrin kept pressing onward. Someone needed to watch. Someone needed to be there when it happened. Finally, Perrin heaved atop one last stone and found himself within a dozen feet of the top. He could make out the figure now. The man stood at the very heart of the vortex of winds, staring eastward, motionless. He was faint and translucent, a reflection of the real world, like a shadow. Perrin had never seen anything like it. It was Rand, of course. Perrin had known that it would be. Perrin held to the stone with one ragged hand and pulled his cloak close with the other. He'd created the cloak several cliff faces ago. He blinked through reddened eyes, gazing upward. He had to focus most of his concentration on pushing back some of the winds to keep himself from being flung out into the tempest. Lightning flashed suddenly, thunder sounding for the first time since he'd begun climbing. That lightning began to arc in a dome around the top of the mountain. It threw light across Rand's face. That hard, impassive face, like stone itself. Where had its curves gone? When had Rand gained so many lines and angles? And those eyes, they seemed made of marble. Rand wore a coat of black and red, fine and ornamented, with a sword at his waist. The winds didn't affect Rand's clothes. Those fell unnaturally still, as if he really were just a statue, carved from stone. The only thing that moved was his dark red hair, blowing in the wind, thrown and spun. Perrin clung to the rocks for his life, cold wind biting into his cheeks, his fingers and feet so numb he could barely feel them. His beard bristled with dusty ice and snow. Something black began to spin around Rand. It wasn't part of the storm. It seemed like night itself leaking from him. Tendrils of it grew from Rand's own skin, like tiny hands curling back and wrapping around him. It seemed evil itself given life.
Rand!
Perrin bellowed.
Fight it! Rand!
His voice was lost in the wind, and he doubted that Rand could have heard him anyway. The darkness continued to seep out like a liquid tar coming through Rand's pores, creating a miasma of pitch around the dragon reborn. Within moments, Perrin could barely see Rand through the blackness. It enclosed him, cutting him off, banishing him. The dragon reborn was gone. Only evil remained.
Rand, please,
Perrin whispered. And then, from the midst of the blackness, from the center of the uproar and the tempest, a tiny sliver of light split through the evil. Like a candle's glow on a very dark night, the light shone upward toward the distant sky like a beacon. So frail. The tempest buffeted it. The winds stormed, howled, and screamed. The lightning beat against the top of the rocky peak, blasting free chunks of rock, scoring the ground. The blackness undulated and pulsed. But still the light shone. A web of cracks appeared down the side of the shell of evil blackness, light shining from within. Another fracture joined it, and another. Something strong was inside, something glowing, something brilliant. The shell exploded outward, vaporizing and releasing a column of light so bright, so incredible that it seemed to sear the eyes from Perrin's head. But he looked on anyway, not raising arm to shade or block the resplendent image before him. Rand stood within that light, mouth open as if bellowing toward the skies above. The sun-yellowed column shot into the air, and the storm seemed to shudder, the entire sky itself undulating. The tempest vanished. That column of fiery light became a column of sunlight streaming down, illuminating the peak of Dragon Mount. Perrin pulled his fingers free from the rock, gazing on with wonder at Rand standing within the light. It seemed so long, so very long since Perrin had seen a ray of pure sunlight. The wolves began to howl. It was a howl of triumph, of glory, and of victory. Perrin raised his head and howled as well, becoming Youngbull for a moment. He could feel the pool of sunlight growing, and it washed over him, its warmth banishing the frozen chill. He barely noticed when Rand's image vanished, for he left that sunlight behind. Wolves appeared around Perrin, flashing into existence mid-leap. They continued to bay, jumping at one another, exulting and dancing in the sunlight as it washed over them. They yipped and barked, tossing up patches of snow as they bounded. Hopper was among them, and he leaped into the air, soaring over to Perrin.
The last hunt begins, Youngbull,
Hopper screamed.
We live! We live!
Perrin turned back to the place where Rand had stood. If that darkness had taken Rand. But it hadn't. He smiled broadly.
The last hunt has come, he screamed to the wolves. Let it begin.
They howled their agreement, as loud as the storm had been just moments before.